Yes, it is good to be back here in Athens. My name is Joseph Sojourner, and I have been working with students in Atlanta for about 10 years now. And what I love about it is when they graduate high school or move into college, a lot of them come up to UGA. And so over these past 10 years, I feel like I've been on the journey with this church. I remember when it was just a small in the other auditorium, and every single time I would come up year after year, work with different students and sitting with them and actually attending this church with them, I would see it get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And then I'm like, is it going to take over the whole plaza? My goodness gracious. But literally beautiful growth in this church. So many stories that I get on my phone, through text, through DMs, what it is, whatever it is on social media, of people just telling me the stories of how Athens continues to feed them as they leave Atlanta, as they go abroad, and what this church has done for them. And I truly have to say, I was so excited to be able to talk to you this morning. Just about a year ago, though, is where the true relationship began, because Sean C. reached out to me and said, hey, we want to do something special for college students here at Athens. And he began to unpack this vision of what college nights would look like. And as I listened to him, I truly was captivated by the whole idea. And I said, this is really, really awesome that your church wants to begin to run down this road. And Josh Bain kind of jumped in on all these meetings, and I guess it was his original idea. And beginning to sit with the students of UGA and the students here at this church and begin to unpack what it could be. I not only fell in love with this church, but as they kind of talked about Athens, I fell in love with Athens. And I started to say, this is crazy. I mean, I love Atlanta, but now I love Athens. Can you love two at the same time? That's a whole different sermon. But I truly begin to be captivated on this idea of there's something special happening, not just in this church, but in this city. But I'll be honest, I literally thought, okay, I'm thinking probably 30, 40 people would come out. I mean, it's a college. Let's just be honest. College services, you don't think too much. Too many people are going to come out to them. And sure enough, last month, hundreds and hundreds of students came out and filled this room up. And I remember walking out and thinking, what an incredible thing that this church has begun. And so if you know a college student, if you are a college student, just get buckle up, because this Tuesday we've got another great, great gathering. So I cannot wait for that. But just like I said, I've been living in Atlanta, Georgia now for the last 10 years. And I loved it because I started as a small group leader with my high school guys. I've absolutely loved working with next generation minds and hearts. I'll tell you exactly why I love it, because when you look in their eyes, you know you're looking in the eyes of a wild dreamer for tomorrow, of what tomorrow is going to look like. When you hug them, you know you're holding on to the future. And there's just something special about the privilege that we get when we volunteer. And a lot of you know that as you work in Upstreet or Wambaland or Inside Out or Transit. You know what it's like when you're working with the tomorrow generation, the generation that literally we're going to pass the baton to in this church. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like seeing eyes through seeing life through their eyes. And I count it a privilege every single day. Got a chance to walk with my guys all through their 4 years of high school. Then they graduated and they asked me to go on staff. And I went from being a small group leader to a groups director. And essentially a groups director is a scout for small group leaders. And so for the next couple of years of my life before becoming the director of the program, I essentially just sat with leaders or potential leaders and asked them questions and said, hey, what is it that leads you to want to be a high school volunteer? And essentially after a coffee or at a lunch or whatever it might have been, wherever we were having this conversation, essentially after 5 minutes, I would ask them the same question. I always say, can you share your story with me? Can you share your story with me? And it's just my way of getting to understand you better, because reality is, we all know as adults, our stories impact the decisions we make today as adults. And sure enough, they'd always start usually in middle school and walk me through their journey. And they would say, this is why I want to be able to give back to a generation so that they don't make the same mistakes that I made when I was in my younger years. And whatever their story might have been, maybe it was a happy home, maybe it was a dysfunctional home, but whatever their story was, it impacted why they were volunteering. And I absolutely love getting a chance to sit with so many men and get a chance to be friends with so many men. But sure enough, the pastor got a chance to take me out to lunch one day, and his name is Clay. He's now the pastor of North Point. And sure enough, he said, hey, I want to grab lunch. He said, yeah. He said, okay, let's grab Subway. I said, okay, interesting call. Wouldn't have picked Subway, but let's make a Subway. Cool. And so here we are. We go to Subway. We just got in line, get our subs, sit down at the booth, and we start talking. And sure enough, after a few minutes, Clay looks at me and says, John, I don't think I've ever asked this, but can you share your story with me? I said, don't do that trick. I know that trick. I do it every single day. I don't want to share my story with you right here. And he's like, oh, come on, just share a little bit. You know how you're at Subway? I mean, it's Subway. You know, you're not trying to go too deep. You're just going to keep it pretty surface, because we only got 6-inch subs right here. We got to get through these things and get back to work. And so I kind of kept it a little bit surface. And sure enough, he began to prod just a little bit more. And it kind of took me a little bit deeper. And by then you're just looking at him like, where are you going? Where are you fishing? What are you trying to fish for? And he pokes and prods a little bit more. And all of a sudden I start to open up more and more and more. And after a while, I began to tell him about my childhood. childhood, and then I get emotional, and I kind of start welling up, and then I start crying over my meatball sub, and he starts crying over his meatball sub as if they're not already salty enough. And people begin to look at us, and they say, why are those two guys crying in a booth? And we're looking back like we're Christians, and Christians are transparent. Worst day of my life. And I remember him looking at me, and he said, Joseph, how come you've never shared this story with anyone? And I said, to be honest with you, I didn't want everybody in my business. That's just the way it is. I was raised where you don't air your dirty laundry out in public, and I didn't want to do it with you. You forced it out of me, and I'm ready to go from this restaurant. I'm humiliated. And he said, you shouldn't be humiliated. You should be proud. This is your story. And he began to tell me more and more about how our stories define us and how I need to be empowered by the story that's already been written for me. As I drove home, I really began to battle with those words. And this thought came to me that kept me up that night. And I said, a story that's untold can't help anyone. And I just sat in my bed that night and thought about that idea. If you never learn how to tell your story, it'll never be able to connect. And never even has the potential to possibly help someone who maybe might be able to relate to it. So I began to write it down that next morning. I said, if I was going to tell my story to a friend or to a family member or even to somebody I don't know or even to a crowd, what would I say? Where would I even begin? What would I want them to know? And this is my hope today, that as I share my story with you, that maybe there'll be moments that you say, I can relate to when he felt that feeling. That I can relate to that moment that he experienced in his younger years, that I may not be able to relate to that moment, but I understand his thought process. My hope is that every single one of us can look at one person's story and say, I have a story. And maybe I've never told my story. Maybe I've been too ashamed to tell my story. Maybe I've just never felt courageous enough to actually open up and say, this is me. But reality is, we all know that we've been cast in this great, great role of life, and that there's something more for each one of us, and that we're all playing just a small part in a much greater story, and that each one of us have each individual story that connects to a greater story. And maybe the first step to us being able to truly realize our potential is being able to say, what's my story? How could I be able to tell it? So I'll begin by saying this. It's not a story of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's just a story of a normal guy raised in Akron, Ohio. Now, there's not too much to say about Akron, Ohio. It used to be the rubber capital of the world. It had Firestone and Goodyear in the city, a bunch of factories. All those factories closed down before I was born. All I had left when I was born was LeBron James, who then took his talents to South Beach, left for that era. We remember that little awkward season. He came back to Cleveland, gave us one championship. Then we had an awkward situation last year. We're kind of getting over it right now. That's the story of Akron, Ohio. That's it in a nutshell. Essentially, my mom had three incredibly handsome young men, John, Joseph, and Justin. She was so blessed to have us all at the same time, practically. And so sure enough, my mom and my dad divorced when we were still in the tummy. And so my dad would visit every other weekend. And I remember there was this tension that happened right around third grade when my dad remarried and truly just fell off the map and didn't really hang around with us too much more. And I remember we used to get so upset. We would say, what kind of dad just stops picking up his kids? What kind of dad just doesn't hang out and just wants to hang out with his new family? What kind of dad just betrays us and acts like we're just old news and just literally doesn't hang out with us anymore? We would just go on and on and on, and we would get ourselves so upset, the three of us just kind of bickering back and forth. And my mom would walk in the room, and she's a true woman of God, and she would always say, listen, we may not understand the decisions of your father, but we do know this. He is your dad, and it's your place to respect him. Don't you let me catch you talking about him like that again. And we'd always go, oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that's the kind of woman she was, a woman of God. Someone whose standard was always higher than so many other people's. And I just remember thinking, why do you choose to always take the high road? Why won't you just be a hater for a little bit, Mom? Why can't you come on down here with the rest of us? But she's still the person that, as I travel around this beautiful world, I get a chance to call her. And it's not just one thing seeing life through my eyes. It's beautiful when you get to hear your mother give her thoughts. And she's somebody that I just respect so, so much. Now, we were raised in a part of town that many people like to refer to as a bad part, but I like to refer to it as the ghetto. And the thing about the ghetto is it's chock full of distractions, many boundaries that can kind of get in the way of you finding excellence. And so there was this brand new school that was being built at the end of our street, and it was called Schumacher, and I was ecstatic about this new school. All my friends were going. I said, this is about to change my life. And my mom, sure enough, had the opportunity to walk that school. And as she walked it, I guess she wasn't that impressed. And when she got home, I said, Mom, did you see the orange lockers? They got orange lockers. This is going to be crazy. This is going to be so great. And she said, you're not going to that school. And I said, what? She said, you guys are not going to be going to that school. My mom was a teacher of 30 years, second grade. My mom believed in optimal learning environments, as she would call it. Now, I thought optimal learning environments were where my friends were. That's all I cared about. And so I said, I think this is optimal, Mom. And she said, it's not optimal. Not only will you not be going, we're going to need to save up money so I can send you to the school that I want to send you to. So for the next year, we're going to eat big pots of spaghetti for dinner. And for lunch, you're going to have honey butter sandwiches, just a piece of bread, a little bit of margarine, and then you squirt some honey on, slap another piece of bread. It's why to this day, when I go out for breakfast with my friends and we get biscuits and honey, I say, get the honey out my face. I don't eat it anymore, and I'm not going back. But sure enough, after a year, my mom had saved up enough money, and here we are pulling up to this brand new house, hopping out the U-Haul, and I remember her jumping, running in and out with these boxes, and she finally locked eyes with us, and she said, look, this is it, this is our new house, and she was so excited, she literally couldn't even process anything, she was so excited that we had finally made it, and here we were just standing there, we didn't know what to think, she had ripped us away from everything that we knew that was familiar, she had ripped us away from all of our friends that we used to call family, and literally, we didn't know what was to come, and if she knew what was to come, I wonder if she would have been as excited as she was that day. I can still tell you what I was wearing my first day of third grade. I can tell you the t-shirt. It was a turquoise Michael Jordan t-shirt. It said Air Joseph on the back. I thought the shirt was so cool. People would want to be my friends. And so here I am walking in the school, and I remember walking and looking around, and I remember thinking, everything about this school is so different. It looks different. It smells different. Everything about it is so foreign. But I said, as long as I have my twin brother, Justin, everything's going to be A-okay. And my mom knew that I typically hid behind Justin, so she went ahead to the administration and she said, I need you to separate Joseph and Justin in all their classes, make sure that they never meet each other during the day. That's just my mom. That's how she is. I can't change her for nothing. So sure enough, we get to the intersection of the hall and Justin turns left. I said, Justin, our class is right. He said, no, my class is left. And sure enough, he walks there in the distance off to his class, and there I was by myself. And I get to the doorway of my class, and I just remember stopping and looking in. I looked at everyone. Then I immediately beeline to the back, typically where my desk was, and I find my name, Sojourner, and I find it, and I finally sit down. I look around, and I remember thinking, wow, I'm different. It was the first moment in my life I realized that I was different. We were the first blacks to integrate Monroe Elementary. Now, people always ask me, you were born during civil rights. I said, does it look like I was born during civil rights? No. My mom just so happened to find the only school where there were no blacks before us. I can't lie to you. I can't change her. That's just the way she is, okay? Now, I had never seen that many whites in all my 8 years of existence. It was literally like walking into an REI. I just thought, where are we at and why in the world have we never heard of this place before? And so here I am kind of trying to process, and I don't understand the jokes. I don't understand the TV shows. I don't understand the music that they're listening to. Everything about it is so different. And I remember thinking, maybe it's not as different as I imagined. Maybe they don't even notice that I'm different. But in those moments, they would say, no, we kind of do notice you're different. You kind of walk with a little bit of a lean. And you're like, what's up, everybody? I'm Joe. And they're like, no, you're pretty different. And it started out as innocent, but as time went on, here we go entering into fourth grade, and those innocent jokes became even more and more sharp, and I began to be the product of bullying, of really, really harsh comments towards me. And I remember I used to get so upset. I used to get so defensive. My brother was so much bigger than me. He was like double my size. I was a really skinny kid with the big head. I had to grow into this thing, And so sure enough, they would always say a lot of things. As soon as Justin would walk away, they would say, your big brother's not here to protect you. And I would say, I don't need my big brother. I'm a grown man all by myself. I'm in the fourth grade, and I wish you would talk about me like that again. And my head would be flopping around, and I'd just be trying to make sure I made sure they lock eyes with them. I said, I ain't scared of any of you. But my mom had made a promise. She said, it took every single thing that I had to move into this house and to get you to this school. You will make a promise to me that you will never get in a fight. And I kept that promise to my mom all the way to the fifth grade. There I was. And we had just been working on our projects all week long. And sure enough, the teacher gets in front of the class and she says, tomorrow's presentation day. And I say, no, there's no way. There is no way that I can get in front of this class and present anything and say anything. I get bullied too much. And sure enough, I stayed after class. I talked to her. I said, listen, I don't know if you know me. My name is Joseph Sojourner. I get bullied a lot at this school. If there is any way possible, you could just look at my test. You could just look at my presentation, kind of give it an A and just kind of push it over and really not ask me to get in front of the class tomorrow because there's no way that I could give a presentation in front of these people. Trust me, I know it's not going to go good. She said, Joseph. I said, yes. She said, I read your report. And I can tell you put a lot of work into it. I think these people deserve to hear all the work that you've placed into it. I said, well, I did put a lot of work into it. That is true. And I was convinced to present just like that. The next day I walk into school, you know, your stomach's hurting because you're like, it's presentation day. It's presentation day, Jesus. And I find the bathroom. I find the last stall. It was my little prayer stall. And I shut the door and I say, God, Jesus, whoever's up there listening right now, I'm going into this science class and I want to just be able to have a great presentation. God, I pray that they like it. God, I pray the teacher likes it and gives me an A. I pray that the class gives me a round of applause, maybe even throws roses at my feet. God, I just pray that I don't get an F. I just want everything to go well. Thank you. Amen. And I walked out and I can still tell you what the presentation was like today. There I was standing in front of the class talking about the architecture of my restaurant along with some wonderful items that I thought up to kind of woo the class with fried pickles and dip. And talking about these pizzas and these wonderful toppings and all these different varieties and why it's going to be cool rooms you can eat them in when a hand shoots up in the back. Question! I say, okay, try and ignore it. There's nothing worse than a question when you're giving an incredible presentation. I said, as you can see here on this pizza, question! His name was Jerry. There's always one in every class, right? Well, this one was Jerry. So I keep trying to press on. Question one more time. I said, yes, Jerry, what's your question? And he said, the toppings on your pizza, are there chitlins and watermelon too? And it wasn't the comment that made me furious. It was the fact that the entire class erupted in laughter. I threw my cardboard down and I jumped over the desk and I grabbed him. And just as I got ready to punch him, my teacher pulled my hand back. And so I just shoved him back with everything I had. And I jumped back to try and get to him. And I'm swinging and she's grabbing me and she's pulling me. And she finally gets me in the hallway. And I'm in the hallway and I start punching the lockers. And I'm punching the lockers in rage because all I want to do is get back to Jerry. So finally I lock eyes with her. And I say, I told you that this would happen. Why did you make me do it? And I just slid down on the ground and started to cry. As I listened to the cackling of the class behind me as they heard me in the hall. And I will never forget what she said next. She leaned down. She locked eyes with me. And she said, Joseph, how much longer are you going to let their words control you? I can't catch my breath. I'm still freezing. She says it again. How much longer are you going to let their words control you? And then she stood up and just walked back in the room and left me in the hallway to process. And I processed her words for the rest of that day and through the absolutely brutal middle school years where things only got worse, where the name calling only got more severe, where the bullying only got more and more physical. Every single morning I'd wake up and get to my door and my mom would say, you're Christian first, sojourner second. Repeat after me. And I would say, I'm Christian first, sojourner second. I'd get right to the door, turn the handle. She says, say it again. I said, I'm Christian first, sojourner second. And I'd walk down those halls as people began to say things to me and I was being called names. And I remember just saying, I'm Christian first, sojourner second. I'm Christian first, sojourner second. I'm Christian first, sojourner second. But for some reason, when I looked at myself in the mirror, I just didn't see what my mom saw anymore. I couldn't find it anymore. I wanted to find the sojourner. I wanted to find the Christian, but for some reason it was disappearing with all the names and I was just getting drowned out by so many constant names that I just said, I know I can't be what they're calling me. Sure enough, we moved into ninth grade. My first day of ninth grade basic metals class now. My teacher called to the front. They said, Joseph, come here. I said, yeah. He said, listen, we know about the bullying that happens to you. We need you to do all your projects outside for this school year because there's too much sharp equipment in this room. I said, okay. So I gather my things and I go outside. And the plan worked perfectly for about 3 weeks until two kids got sick and he had to take them down to the nurse's office, which allowed four kids to walk outside. And I was spray painting my red box. They kicked it across the yard and beat me that day. And I remember thinking, I just can't seem to win. What else am I supposed to do? I was in my French class. I didn't do well on a quiz. My mom said there's no C's allowed in this house, so I had to make sure I brought home all A's and B's. So I stayed after. I said, I want to make sure I can do a quiz. I want to make sure I can do any type of extra credit. I just want to make sure I can get a good grade in this class. And she looked over her glasses and she said, how am I supposed to teach you French when you can't even speak English? And I just stopped that day. And then I said, I'm sorry. And I walked out. And that was the day I quit. I quit caring. I quit fighting. I quit thinking that somebody was going to actually stop and try to rescue me. I quit thinking that something good could possibly happen to a kid like me. And my mom saw she was losing her boys. She set up a meeting with the principal and she sat down with them and she said, I'm telling them to turn the other cheek. I'm telling them to take the high road. But at this point, I don't know what else I can say. And he said, ma'am, with all due respect, what did you think would happen when you placed them in this school? My mom got home that night and she went right to her room and shut the door. And I knew she always would shut the door. She didn't want us to see her. She didn't want us to see her crying. My mom never cried in front of us, so she could always be a strong woman. And finally, she gathered herself and walked out. She said, John, Joseph, Justin, living room. We came and we sat down. And I said, yeah. She said, I need to take you out of that school. I said, where are we going to go? She said, I haven't figured that out yet. Right around that time, John says, what about Firestone? School that I always see on the news. It's got great academics. It's got great athletic programs. It's got great diversity. Maybe we can. I remember looking at him and saying, Firestone, John. What makes you think we have a shot of making it that school 30 minutes down the street that's always on the news, that great school that would possibly pick us up? You already know we don't have a chance of making it there. Why are you still having the audacity to dream? It's now 6 years, no friends, no speaking, and yet you still think that something good could possibly happen to us. And my mom said, well, we could at least fill out the application. I said, fine, let's fill it out, but we know we don't have a shot, and we filled it off, mailed it out, and I didn't think anything else of it for about a month or so. I came home one day and my mom had a message on her answering machine, not voicemail, answering machine. She hit play and said, congratulations, John, Joseph, and Justin have been accepted to Firestone High School. And I remember thinking, what? Is something good actually about to happen to us? Could something good actually happen to kids like us? Walking into my first day of 10th grade, I walked in, made about 3 steps before I just stopped. And I'll never forget the sight. Blacks, whites, Hispanics all hanging out, horse playing, chatting and chumming it up in the hallway. And I remember thinking, I've never in my life seen any scene like this. And I just put my head down. I walked all the way to my first period class, sat down in the second to last seat. I said, hopefully nobody will notice me. I could just disappear and I could be safe. And I don't want anyone to try and test me. Tap, tap, tap on my back. His name was Sean. I said, yeah. He said, hey, man, you got a pencil? I said, I ain't got a pencil. Come on, man, you don't have a pencil. I said, I told you I ain't got a pencil. Elevate your voice, let him know. Don't play with me again. Not the one. Tap, tap, tap. Come on, man, I know you got to have a pencil in that big book bag of yours. And I did the only thing I knew to do. I said, this is not the moment for me to be tested. I got to make sure I make some type of bold move on the first day so that everyone knows that they won't pick on me. And I jumped up and I knocked all the books off his desk. I said, I told you I ain't got a pencil. Don't touch me again. And I was kicked out of my first year of class, first day, just like that, sent to the principal's office. And I won't forget, she looked at me and she said, Joseph, I know your story. I know the school you guys come from. I'm not going to suspend you. I'm not even going to put you on detention. I'm going to give you another chance, but you need to promise me that you are going to try to change. I said, okay. She said, try. Tomorrow, I want you to give us a shot. I said, okay. Next day of class, I walk in. Second day, I walk towards the back of the class and get back to my desk. And sure enough, as I'm passing this girl, she says, is that the boy that flipped out over the pencil? He is crazy. I thought, good. At least now they think I'm crazy. At least now I'm safe. At least now nobody is going to try and take these pencils. We're now 7 years. No friends. No speaking. No one even knows my name. The good thing about being quiet that long is you learn to listen really, really well. You learn to observe life happening all around you. Observe relationships that are forming and disappearing right in front of your face. And you're thinking, why would he say that to her? Why would she say that to him? Why can't she see this? You begin to not just look at people's words, but you look at their body language and their tone just below the surface that shows true motives, techniques that I still use when I sit with adults today and we talk about life. Right about then, we're moving into 11th grade. And I walk out of my class one day and I see Justin, he's now 6'8", about 280 pounds. So sure enough, we got football and basketball people trying to woo him into coming to practice, but he was still so shy. We all were shy. So they were trying to convince him that he had what it took. And they had cracked jokes and they were making Justin laugh. And I remember he was cracking up at the lockers. And I remember thinking, I've never in my life laughed with anyone in the hallway before. I got home that night and I said, God, I want nothing more than for you to send two people so that I can stand in my locker and maybe laugh one day. I just want to have that one experience in high school before it's over. And my lights blinked and a bearded man in a robe lowered and sat at the edge of my bed just like that. That's a lie. That didn't happen at all. I woke up the next morning and I heard nothing again. And I just said, I have to make a choice. I know that I can do something. And I made the decision that day to smile. I said, I'm going to smile. Someone says my name. I'm going to smile. Somebody looks at me. I'm going to smile. Someone says a joke. I just want people to see that I'm not toxic. I want people to see that I can possibly be a friend worth being friends with. I said, if somebody even looks my direction, I'm going to smile. And the plan worked perfectly. Then about 2 weeks, it kind of went bad because everyone started calling me Kool-Aid. They're like, what up, Kool-Aid? And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not a compliment. But sure enough, by the end of the year, two or three oddballs were willing to be my friend. And that was two or three more than I could ever, ever ask for. Sure enough, one day we were walking back to my aunt's house. My mom picked us up and drove us back 30 minutes to our house. My one friend said, hey, I'm going to run in and grab a piece of pizza. I said, that's awesome. I'll wait for you out here. And he came out a couple minutes later with two greasy napkins. And he hands me one. And I said, what is this? He says, pizza. I said, for what? He said, for you. I said, why? He's like, because I know you like pizza. I said, I know, but why did you buy me? He said, listen, if you don't want the pizza, give it back. But it wasn't just pizza. It was the first moment in my life I remember realizing that I had a friend. It was the first moment I realized that somebody thought about me when I actually was not standing there beside them. As I walked back to my aunt's house eating that nasty, greasy gas station pizza, I remember thinking, this is so surreal. And I travel around so many places now. People say, what's the best pizza you've ever had? And I say, I always think back to that nasty, greasy napkin that I had that day that tasted like heaven. And I got home that night and I was absolutely mortified, terrified. I said, God, I know that eventually these two friends are going to realize that I'm toxic. I know that eventually these friends are going to realize that it's not even worth it trying to be my friend. And I know that they're probably going to regret the time that they spent even trying to connect with me. But God, if you let them just stay in my life, I promise I'll be the best friend that they've ever had. I promise that I will love them better than anyone else. God, I just pray that you can stick them around so that I can have somebody to spend my last year of high school with. And to say that God answered that prayer at the end of my 11th grade going into 12th grade would be a drastic understatement. It was as if my entire life there were clouds that covered me up and God began to pull those clouds away and shine light down on this young man. And people began to say, yeah, there's this new kid in our school. He's really, really polite. He's really, really thoughtful. He'll listen to your story. He'll actually really, really try and help you with whatever he can do. You ought to get to know him. His name is Joseph. He's a brand new student. And I wasn't even new. I had been there for 3 years. Sure enough, people were starting to give me a chance and I didn't understand it. There I was, senior year, and people were beginning to notice my name in the hallway and say, hey, Joe, and I didn't understand it. My glasses came off right around this time. My braces came off. I had a little job at Taco Bell. I said, maybe I could save up, have a nice outfit for the first time. My mom didn't have much money, and so I saved up, bought me a nice little outfit. I thought, maybe for the first time, maybe a girl will even notice me, which it worked because in eighth period class there, my senior year, I walked in and Yolanda looks at me and she says, oh my gosh, Joe, you are cute. And I said, oh, thank you so much. It's a girl that's 17 years in the crock pot. You better get yourself a fork now. They were starting to notice me. They were starting to actually pay attention. I didn't understand what was going on. I began to say, I get intimidated when people even speak to me. I need to learn how to talk. My senior year, I said, I just need to learn how to speak because I didn't know how to yet. I said, I'm going to take this one little workshop here on acting and hopefully my teacher can teach me. And he said, hey, listen. And we began to kind of work through what it looked like to actually talk in front of someone. And I said, I'm so, so intimidated. He said, I'm going to work with you. I want you to learn. I think you have a lot of gift one day. I want to cast you in a play. I said, there's no way I could do this. He said, I want to work with you every day, day in and day out. And he cast me. And as I began to work in the play, I said, hey, listen, this is an awesome school, but there's no roles here for friends that I possibly could see who could be people of color. I said, why don't we do multicultural plays? And he said, well, be honest with you, Joe, there's no blacks or Hispanics that come to these plays. I said, I'll make you a deal. I said, if we can get blacks and Hispanics to come with the whites, do you think maybe possibly one day we could do multicultural plays? He said, yeah, sure. I'd love to see that. And for the next few weeks, I campaigned with the little bit of influence I had, with the little bit of voice I was given. I gave everything I had to those halls. And people began to pick up on the movement of the idea of what we could do something special there. And sure enough, they added on one day of Romeo and Juliet, another day of Romeo and Juliet. And to this day, Firestone High School does multicultural plays every single year to celebrate what the school was able to do together that year. From a little kid, he was just given a voice. I had a chance to go to another organization, Black United Students, senior year. Sit down, listen to all the problems, dreams, aspirations of this group of people. And I remember raising my hand and I said, this is awesome. I love this. I feel right at home. But can I ask you a question? She said, yes. I said, why are there no whites here? She said, because it's Black United Students. I said, that is true. The name would kind of weed whites right out at the door. They probably wouldn't feel welcome with a name like that. I said, but if we have dreams, problems, and aspirations, they have dreams, problems, and aspirations, why can't we do something different here? Why can't we begin to work and say we can make a better school for everybody? Maybe we should take the black off and just call it United Students. I think maybe we could do something for the first time here that's never been done in the school before. What do you think we could do? And the teachers looked at me and she said, you're crazy. And I said, I am crazy. And I began to campaign those halls again with the little bit of influence that I had. And I said, I need you to catch a vision that we can do something special that's never been done in this school before. And I began to lock eyes on this girl named Laura. I said, Laura, I think if we work together, we can do something really, really special. I think you have the heart. I think you have the mind to be able to understand people's problems. And I think you need to be president of Black United Students as we try to convert it to United Students. She said, Joseph, that's awesome, but one problem, I'm not black. I said, that's true. And that's a mountain we are going to have to climb. It's going to be a little steep in moments, and you're going to feel a little discouraged. But I believe if you listen to them, if you genuinely care, they won't even notice you are white. They'll begin to trust you, and you'll begin to see way past color. We campaign. I still remember Election Day, walking in that room full of blacks, whites, Hispanics, all chanting, United Students, United Students, United Students. The black teachers filed in, staring at me. I'm standing in the back of the room, too intimidated to ever be seen by a whole room full of people. And they announced Laura as the president of Black United Students, or United Students, as she said that day. And the room erupted, and people were running, high-fiving and hugging everyone. And Lauren walks to the front and literally breaks down and starts crying, and she sees me, and she walks all the way to the back of the room, and she grabs me, and she's sobbing, and she's whispering to my ears, look what we did, look at what we were able to do, and I don't even know what we had done. I was terrified. I was overwhelmed. I tell people, when you go through most of your life with no people in your life, you just dream for people. And it would take me years later till I moved to Atlanta and began to see God unravel my story to really realize that I was simply placed on this planet to dream for people. Which is why when I heard this theme, Athens, I love you, I thought, oh, these are the kind of people that are my kind of people. That understand that we see life distinctly different. That yes, people come wrapped in all different colors, shapes, and sizes. We see something beyond that. We see something more internal, something more beautiful that connects every single one of us, something greater, a greater story through each one of our beautiful individual tales we've already had written and continue to write each day in and day out. It wasn't too long after that that I moved down here, had a chance to go to Waffle House, one of the greatest gifts Atlanta gave me. I told them about this story, and Athens actually bought this wonderful Waffle House stool. Athens, I love you. So here I was at this Waffle House, and I sat down at the bar, and I got a chance to order my All-Stars, what I always order, the same thing. And it was my favorite waitress twice, so she already knows how I like everything prepared. And I look over, and there's this lady sitting here, and I remember she looked very disheveled, looked like it had been a very long night. You oftentimes see people like that at Waffle House. That's just real talk. And so I looked and I thought, I'm going to leave her alone because it looks like she's just trying to get here and get a coffee and get out of here. As I looked forward, I remember feeling pretty convicted. I looked back, I said, I'm sorry I didn't get your name. What is it? And she said, it's Ann. I said, nice to meet you, Ann. And she said, what's your name? I said, it's Joseph. And she was like, nice to meet you, Joseph. I said, thank you. I looked back and I felt good about myself. I said, that was good. God, that was good, right? Okay, let me enjoy my All-Star. About 10 minutes later, Ann said, Joseph, what do you do? I said, okay, here we go. I said, oh, well, I work with churches. And she said, oh, churches. And I said, and there goes breakfast, just like that. And for the next 10 minutes, Ann begins to unpack all the things she doesn't like about churches, all the horrible tales she had of church people judging her, that when she walked into the doors, church people act like they were better than her, that when she brought her friends, they all seemed to be judged and didn't nobody even try to get to know her. And she said, I just can't stand the church people because they walk in there and they act like they're perfect and they don't possibly allow people like myself to feel like they're at home there. She's like, I couldn't go to churches. And I stopped her in the middle of a rant and I said, Ann, can I ask you a question? She said, yeah. I said, do you think every church is bad? She said, well, no. I said, okay, I guess that's all I wanted to know. And she said, now, wait, I need to stop you right there. Now, I love Jesus. I tell my friends all the time, you need Jesus. You need to go to church. I said, that's awesome. And then she said something that rocked my world. She said, and I'm a firm believer that the most called people in the church aren't even the ones on stage. And I put my fork down. I looked at her. I said, what? She said, I'm a firm believer that the most called people in the church aren't even the ones that stand on the stage. I reached over, I put my hand on hers. I said, Ann, we need you at our church. She said, what? I said, we need you at our church. She said, why me? I said, because we don't have your story at our doors. We need your story. Right around that time, Twy came back and she was filling up our coffees. And she said, girl, go to that boys' church. It's a great church. I said, come on, double the tip today, Twy. Tag team. And it was pretty quiet for the rest of breakfast. Didn't say much. I got up, paid, walked out. She kind of moseyed behind me. She said, I might actually consider going to your church. And I stopped and said, oh. I said, that's awesome. She said, what time is service? I said, well, it's 9, 11, 4:30, 6:30. Oh, my goodness, it must be a big church. I said, it's a little bit rather large. She was like, well, what time are you preaching? I said, well, I'm not preaching. There's another guy. She was like, well, I want to come when you're preaching. I said, you come for the other guy. He's way better than me, trust me. And she said, if this church is anything like you, maybe it's not so bad after all. I said, Ann, this church is just like me, if not better. I said, because we get people like you. We love people like you. And she smiled. She walked back to her car, got in it. I was putting the key in mine, and she pulled up and let her window down. She says, I don't know what even made me tell you all that. I never tell a person all that. And I said, I know exactly what made you tell me all that. You ran into somebody who made you confident enough to just be yourself, which in turn made you comfortable enough to simply tell me your story. Thanks. And she smiled. She said, yeah. And drove off. And she drove off. I stood there in that parking lot and I thought, I wish I could tell her my story. I wish I could tell her that I was the kid who didn't feel like he had any worth. That I went through most of my childhood with no one even knowing my name. That no one took the time to even ask who I was, to even ask my story. And then one day somebody did something that was really small, and maybe it felt the same way it did when I asked you your name. But somebody thought about me enough to buy me a piece of pizza. And for the first time, God began to show me more about myself than I could ever see. A God who seemingly was quiet most of my life began to speak in ways I couldn't even see. And then another person sitting over a meatball sub inspired me to say, hey, maybe all that happened to you is for a reason. Maybe all that happened to you was so that you could connect your story to other people's story and be part of a greater story that's being told all throughout the world. And if you just knew me, you would know that we need you at our doors. And if we believe that this church could be the greatest place, if we believe in this idea of Athens, I love you, then the greatest question we ask ourselves day in and day out is how much do we love them? That the people that don't look like us, think like us, walk like us, talk like us, how much are we willing to say that we still believe that they're fearfully, wonderfully made in an image of a God who says, you are made mine, son, daughter. Are these people just like me? I said, yeah, they're just like me, if not better. Why I love this town is because of people like you who made me love this town. As I walked through these streets for the last year, I got to look and see it through your eyes, see the beautiful people. Even as crazy as times were, they said, I want you to meet this person. I want you to meet this person. Yeah, it's kind of crazy right now, but you need to hear this person's story. What if we were that kind of church? As people walk through these doors, they said, hey, I've never been known. I've never been noticed, typically judged. But we could say, well, you need to come to this space, this place full of people that are just like you, messed up, but found a God and realized that we don't look at people's color. We don't look at people's ideas. We don't look at people's lifestyle. We could truly say, we love you. We challenge you, we cheer you, and we make sure we remind you that there's a God who loves you first. What if we were that kind of church that loved Athens like that? How beautiful of a place would this be? It's that this isn't a building. This is a community of people who have not taken our eyes off of the number one goal, to love as God would, to love all as God would. Sometimes in a big way, sometimes as small as a piece of pizza. I love to pray for us. God, the building is nothing without the people that sit in it. You filled this place with some beautiful hearts. Thank you. Thank you for the people that walk throughout these streets, these neighborhoods, these communities, these stores, these workplaces, and even in this church. Thank you for creating a place where when people walk in, they feel loved, they feel known. God, empower us to be able to do more than we ever could. And for the person in this room who said, I've never even had the courage to tell my story, God, I pray they realize that they are based on a true story and that there's no reason to be ashamed, and there's every reason to help others, because a story that's untold can't help anyone. Thank you for the tales you've wrote in each one of our lives. Thank you for the tales you continue to write today and tomorrow. Thank you for sending your son to die for us. That gives us true purpose, true calling, true meaning, to be able to remind Athens day in and day out, I love you. And it's in your precious son Jesus' name we give all the praise, all the glory, and all the honor. The church say together, amen. Thanks, y'all. Love you.